Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Around 5 million Mexican workers were allowed to legally work in the U.S. in the mid-20th century under the Bracero program. The agreement between the governments of the U.S. and Mexico was originally established in 1942 to address the work shortage caused by the Second World War. The jobs were primarily agricultural. The program ended long after the war in 1964. One West Texas site along the border served as a key processing site for braceros starting in 1951. The Rio Vista farm in Socorro on the outskirts of El Paso once served as a poor farm for the indigent of El Paso County, including orphans, the homeless, and the elderly. The stuccoed adobe buildings were built in the popular Mission Revival style. Think the iconic silhouette of the Alamo. Over a dozen structures were built on the Rio Vista site to serve as eating and sleeping quarters and an infirmary. Rio Vista Farm was chosen as the Bracero Program's first permanent reception and contracting center in 1951. The U.S. Labor Department contracted up to 1,500 men a day there. Almost 900,000 workers passed through Rio Vista through the Bracero Program's end in 1964. Rio Vista is the last remaining facility associated with the Bracero program. The city of Socorro and other organizations have seized on the unique history of this site. It received a National Historic Landmark designation in December 2023 and recently unveiled the first bilingual marker in the program's history. We're talking today with two of the people who fought to keep this important chapter of U.S. and Texas history from being forgotten. Victor Reta is the Historic Preservation Officer for the City of Socorro, and Sayla Mota Casper is Executive Director of Latinos in Heritage Conservation, a leader in preserving Latinx heritage. Mota Casper explains how Rio Vista came on the historic conservation radar.
So back in 2014, 2015, I was working for the National Trust for Historic Preservation and trying to find threatened and endangered sites associated with Latinx, Latino history. And I really wanted to find a site that told the Bracero story to just help highlight what an incredible history this was. And it's such an unknown history. It's a history that's not taught to us in our history books, but a history that I stumbled on later in life. I was searching, and thankfully that year, our partner, Preservation Texas, had listed this small site, Rio Vista Farm, in Socorro, Texas, to its most endangered places list. And prior to that, it hadn't even come on our radar. I had reached out to all of the state historic preservation offices along the borderlands that participated in the program. So from Texas to California, where we knew that there were processing centers, I had reached out to local cities where these locations were located. Then it came up through this most endangered places list, and it was incredible that it was listed, it was still there, and that's really what introduced me to the site, and went and talked to the city that year, and we, over time, in 2015, we became partners. And then after I left the National Trust, we still kept together because the last part of the project was to see through this National Historic Landmarks projects that I had initiated, and so have been working with them for almost 10 years now.
And Victor, I'm assuming you've been involved in this process for just about as long. And, you know, for the city of Socorro, there's so much history that goes back to the 17th century. You've got the beautiful missions there in Socorro and near Socorro. Can you tell us a little bit about this particular site?
I think first and foremost, it's good to preface by saying that the city of Socorro is just this beautiful desert oasis next to a huge modern city. We see a lot of rural farmland, agriculture, amazing Spanish mission architecture, you know, that really a city just kind of embraced and really grew from the Bracero site. So much of its characteristics are drawn from that. It's a very, what we consider to be small here in this area, a 40,000 populated city. with the heart of it being, you know, our cultural heritage. And we really just span from those characteristic qualities of how we built the city. And we're very neighborly, and it's a beautiful site with a lot of attention to our heritage and education. And we're just really, really enamored and humbled that we're able to share the story with not only our residents or our larger area of our county, but really sharing the story now with the world of, you know, how we came to be.
If visitors were to stop by that particular site in Socorro, what is it that they would see, and how would that compare to what is planned?
So if I were to paint a picture for you, we've kind of done some already improvements to make it, you know, very suitable to house the public. So we're in the middle of this rehabilitation program. So there's like an imaginary line through the property where half of the buildings have already been stabilized. So roofing has gotten done. It looks like a modern day mission on the inside, but on the outside, it's true to its character, you know, with our parapets and our crowns and making sure that we have every line plaster and adobe cemented in this time period to make sure that it's truly representative of the time that it was built. But you can clearly see the contrast of what's coming. Some of the buildings are already in use for our community center, for our art program, our after school program, and our exercise program. And those are the first five buildings that you're going to see when you walk in. You're also going to see the renovated front pergola or the patio area, which the braceros used to eat under. So that's still intact, hasn't changed. We just reinforced the wood, made sure that it was sturdy and able to house the weather and weather the storms that we have here in the desert. Believe it or not, we have high winds. So it's like taking a look back in time, but with modern touches such as the paved parking lot, and we have Wi-Fi. So little things that you wouldn't necessarily stick out are implemented there. And as I mentioned, it is looking at a picture of what's to come, because we are working towards building the museum for the braceros, the cultural center, the conference room, the library, the economic development offices, business incubators. So it's literally like a before and an after. And we are just so excited for the public to kind of be on board with this project with us and really put money to restoring our history and cementing our story and making sure that this is not only a public use project, but also a history and education project and also an economic development project. It's been 10 years of us planning to making sure that our investment in this property wasn't going to be something that took away from the character or from the character defining features or even the main point, which is the story of the bracero. We really wanted to put that at the forefront, and everything that we decided to do was really encompassing of what happened there on the site. The public can go right now and kind of see the before and the after and really get a clear idea of what's going on, what's coming. We are going to break ground on our first building, hopefully in August, if not early September. And that'll be our first new building, truly, where the public hasn't been inhabiting since the Bracero program. So we're very, very excited for that.
Sayla, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the Bracero program in general. It was a huge foreign worker program that was established to help fill labor vacancies that were caused by the Second World War. It lasted from 1942 to 64. What role did the Rio Vista Center have in the Bracero program?
Yeah, so as Victor said, the site is just, it's a time capsule. When you go there, the site initially was built as a county poor farm. And so because of that, back in the teens to the 20s, leading up to and through the Great Depression, there was a significant need for housing and places for, you know, individuals that had no housing to actually go and stay there. So during this time, as you said, during the Bracero program, when the United States was looking to create the Bracero program, but also expedite its proficiency, what they recognized was that when they were coming through in Mexico City and then going through the stopping points through the north, that there was a lot of processing that occurred during that time. So the United States and Department of Labor and all of the different federal partners at the time decided that the best thing would be to expedite this process. So they began to look for sites there in El Paso to begin to think through where could we take this on ourselves and do a lot of the immigration work there for efficiency's sake. So then they could get these skilled workers out, you know, into the fields and out into the railroad where we had significant labor shortages. And unfortunately, the very first place that they decided to try out was the Coliseum, where they inhumanely put the braceros into the stockyard there where they were lined up. It was very cold at the time. There were not enough, you know, bathroom facilities to allow individuals to come through. And during this time, we're talking anywhere from 10 to 20,000 people per day that they would give contracts to. So because of that, they recognized that there was this inefficiency and inhumane processing that was occurring during this. Rio Vista Farm was already set up for this type of location. It had, you know, 18 barracks around it that were already created during this time. It had all of the support systems that it needed. And so when they went there, they recognized that this was an opportunity to then take the historic adobe buildings that had been built in, like, in the 20s and 30s, the site had evolved to then be able to house braceros during this time. And again, there were not enough efficient, humane bathrooms, showers, places to eat. And so the site then evolved, as Victor said, to be able to then accommodate the braceros. They added, you know, excusados, bathrooms, they added water fountains, they added showers. One of the buildings was called the mess hall, and it said that they could feed up to 3,000 people there a day. And at any given point in time, throughout its period, you would see up to about 20,000 people come through to actually get their contracting going from barrack to barrack. So as Victor says, in this time capsule, you can really step in there and visualize and see exactly what the braceros went through from one point to the next point, where they would begin getting things like physical examinations. They would get x-rays, their hands would be looked at to see if they were calloused, to see if they were qualified enough. They would unfortunately get DDT'd and deloused because they were seen as some type of animal. And that Poinsett hut where the braceros were actually deloused in, we're lucky that it's still there. It still tells that story. And then they would go through this entire process. It was laborious. It would usually take one day. Sometimes it could take up to 2 days, and that's where you needed sleeping accommodations. So they would stay there, sleep there. So from 1951 to 1964, it served as the first Bracero Reception Center. And it was also a U.S. headquarters there, in that they would train a lot of the doctors that were there. They would train a lot of the different federal employees to go there then to be able to open up the other facilities along the borderlands. And at any given point in time, there were always five reception centers that would open and close, with Rio Vista being the staple that always stayed open from 1951 to 1964.
Selah Mota Casper is the executive director of Latinos in Heritage Conservation. And Victor Reta is the historic preservation officer for the city of Socorro, Texas. When we come back, many Mexican Americans in the U.S. have ties to the Bracero program, and it's a link to the past that may still be buried.
So I think it's vastly important that, you know, we each kind of like dig a little bit into our personal history and maybe ask those questions like, hey, like, I know my uncle or my dad or my grandfather or great grandfather mentioned that he was a farm worker by chance. Would he be a Bracero farm worker, right?
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Nearly 900,000 braceros passed through Rio Vista Farm in Socorro, Texas, between 1951 and 1964. These Mexican laborers were allowed to temporarily work in the U.S. in mostly low-paying, back-breaking agricultural jobs. Rio Vista served as the Bracero program's first U.S. headquarters and was its first permanent reception and contracting center. Rio Vista Farm consists of historic adobe barracks and wooden structures currently in use as a community center. Plans are underway to revitalize the nearly 20 buildings to create the city's first public library, a small business incubator, and the nation's first Bracero History Museum. 91-year-old Sebastian Corral is one of the last known living Braceros. He first passed through Rio Vista in 1953. He spoke last May at a ceremony marking the National Historic Landmark designation.
Nunca pensaba yo volver a llegar a este sitio.
I never thought I'd be back at Rio Vista, where we are today.
Donde estamos ahorita, en las condiciones que llegamos, en las condiciones completamente...
We arrived in the most difficult circumstances. We were humiliated in every way possible. They gave us the hardest work in the U.S. That's why they called us Braceros.
Porque trabajaban con puro brazo.
We work with our brazos, our arms. We only work with our arms. Whether it was picking cotton, vegetables, lettuce, cabbage, it was all with our hands, our arms. Just to earn $10 or $15, working from sunup to sundown, for $10 or $15.
Corral is just one of 4.6 million total guest workers who toiled in the Bracero program. We're talking today with two individuals who helped champion Rio Vista as a site worth preserving. Sela Mota Casper is the executive director of Latinos in Heritage Conservation, and Victor Reta is the historic preservation officer for the city of Socorro, Texas. Reta says the history of Braceros in the U.S. is a difficult and often brutal one, but it's one that merits preservation.
The national recognition of the Braceros site and Rio Vista specifically fosters immense local pride in Socorro, linking this small, underserved community to a broader national narrative and setting a foundation for sustainable local development. Emerging from the shadows, the stories of the Bracero program are just crucial for understanding our shared American history, as you're mentioning, and the genesis and challenges today faced by modern Latino communities. These stories are a part of our collective identity, and they still have lessons to teach us. They also deserve recognition and reflection. I think that's what we're really trying to do here.
Because even the bad history is history, and that is history that we need to learn from.
Agreed. As the only remaining structures from the Bracero program, you know, Rio Vista offers a unique opportunity to really revitalize and commemorate this pivotal chapter of American history. You know, and our vision really is to transform Rio Vista into not only a vibrant space that honors our rich heritage, but really serves a hub for community growth. And we encourage everyone across the nation who may be hearing this, you know, who values this history and supports resilience along the border to join us. And, you know, if you're part of a Bracero lineage, please contribute to this one-of-a-kind project, whether it's through oral histories, which we're capturing at the University of Texas at El Paso's Oral History Institute, whether it's by donating an artifact possibly to our museum, sharing photos with us. We really want this to be a collective and a collaborative effort to really share the story of the Bracero people.
There are probably a lot of Latinos living here in the U.S. who may or may not know that they have ties to the Bracero program. And so if you know of somebody in your family, or if maybe a parent or a great-grandparent who had those stories that they passed down, it doesn't hurt to ask, right? You want to share those stories. You want to keep that history alive because, again, like Sebastian Corral, he's almost like the World War II vets that were feted recently in France. You want to capture that bit of history before it disappears.
Oh, yeah, 1,000%. And like for me specifically, you know, my dad was a farm worker, and so were my uncles and my grandfather. And it was kind of just not really shared with me until I got older and I started working here that I started asking questions. So I think for Latinos across the country, there might be a history of a migrant farm worker, not necessarily using the word bracero. So I think it's vastly important that, you know, we each kind of like dig a little bit into our personal history and maybe ask those questions like, hey, like I know my uncle or my dad or my grandfather or great grandfather mentioned that he was a farm worker by chance. Would he be a bracero farm worker, right? Because that's going to be like a different level of experience.
Well, Sayla, I'd like to talk to you a little bit. There was a ceremony recently in which the site received a bilingual plaque as a National Historic Landmark. Tell us about the significance about this particular plaque or plaques.
Yeah, we are so excited and so honored that Rio Vista Farm and the Bracero Reception Center received designation as a National Historic Landmark within the Federal Registry. This is one of the highest types of designations that a site could get, just right under a national monument. So to have a site that's associated with Mexican history, a site that's associated with Bracero history, farm workers, recent history, it is such an honor to have this recognition, but also just to be able to make that connection to historical site that's still there. And as you said, Norma, so many of us can tie our roots to that, to farm labor, to braceros. This is a touchstone for all of us. And what makes it so significant is that throughout the United States, listed in the National Register of Historic Places and sites that are designated as a National Historic designation, under 1% of those sites are associated with Latinx-related history. So the significance of this is incredible for us, for me too, personally, but also as we recognize the histories of others, as we begin to tell a more authentic and democratized history, this is really sharing with the United States and the world that Bracero history was a huge contribution to the making of the United States. And as you mentioned, it's the first ever bilingual plaque. We were so excited and so honored to have that there. It has meant so much to the community members. When we were there during the great celebration that we had in May, it was beautiful just to see the Bracero families taking a photograph in front of a Spanish marker. Not only is it the first, but it's one that then our community can read and understand and take pride in as well.
Well, I'm curious whether you think that this might be the right time for something like this to happen, because unfortunately in Texas, sometimes it's one step forward, two steps back. You see progress, but then you see the kind of reluctance to allow certain types of histories to be learned. And so, Sayla, I'm wondering, there's efforts from perhaps your organization, or maybe even Victor as well might have something to say about this, but are there any efforts to broaden the education of this particular program and this particular site? Are there any programs being planned in schools? Are there any advertising campaigns maybe to other cities in Texas that may center on that historical designation? And so I'm wondering if there's efforts to broaden the knowledge of this particular site and what it stands for.
Absolutely. And, you know, as Victor said, having the site not only stabilized, but revitalized and brought back to the community, that is part of that messaging and saying that this history was so significant and the site was so significant that the city decided to put serious resources into it to help preserve the site, reuse the site, and tell this history there. But for us at Latinos in Heritage Conservation, the message here is so strong in that saying that so much of our Latinx Mexican history has been erased and written out of the American story. For us, this type of story is so important and so central so that way we can make sure that there is acknowledgement, there's representation, there's visibility, that our community can see ourselves not only in historical sites, but also in history books and things that are taught in the classroom, especially today. You know, there's such a fight among what history should be taught, what history should not be taught. We know that this history and everyone's history deserves to be taught. Latinx BIPOC histories belong in our American history book. And because of that, Latinos and Heritage Conservation, along with the City of Socorro, we have created lesson plans that are being taught. We're doing teacher workshops throughout Texas right now, with the City of Socorro and Rio Vista Farm being one of the sites that we help to highlight and showcase and teach teachers. This is how you can teach your students, you know, K through five, about the Bracero program. This is how you can teach around historic sites. So anytime we do an outreach, we also have an educational component, because we really believe that through education, our history is going to be rewritten back into the book. So we very much believe in education. And then Victor, you know, I will let him talk. They're doing so much around the local community to do outreach with schools. So I'll pass it on to you, Victor.
So in terms of what we're doing to further promote education, I think Sayla really hit the nail on the head with our efforts. I think we have a really great relationship with our community independent school districts. We received a lot of support from them as well, and, you know, how to get our story into the classroom when there's, you know, limited funds maybe and you can't take a field trip. But I think there's just been such a greater support from our legislature right now that they want to see the story told. You know, Texas Pride, this is a Texas story. You know, sharing where our history, Latino history and heritage came from, and developing this part of Texas, you know, is very unique. There's even talk of movies being made about Braceros. So I think there's a lot of attention to the Bracero movement. And there's a huge momentum to sharing the story, not only here in Texas, but obviously in the other areas where Bracero processing sites were originally, like in California, for example. That's a huge hub of information and education and connection. So I think it's really a pivotal time where we're connecting with each other and further uplifting these Braceros, not only individual testimonies such as Mr. Corral, but also the entire movement of a history that has occurred in the United States involving Mexico.
Well, I would encourage people to, when they're driving up or down I-10, everybody drives through the El Paso area. And almost always they say, yeah, but I never stop. I encourage people to take that Socorro exit and take in Socorro. Visit this site. See the potential there. Visit the mission. Eat at one of the restaurants. Victor, what else can people do if they were to maybe make that pit stop?
Yeah, of course. We always welcome visitors. We have visitors from all over the world visit our mission, La Purísima. They can take a tour of Rio Vista. There's amazing Mexican, authentic Mexican food. We actually have our own brewery as well. So we now make our own beer. We have our own wine tasting room. So if beer's not your thing, you can also look at the wine tasting room that we have. We have different festivals throughout the year, different educational components such as conferences. The Binational Conference, for example, is a really great one that happens around September for Hispanic Heritage Month. And it connects not only Mexico to the U.S., but it connects our sister city of Ciudad Juarez with El Paso, San Elizario, and Socorro. You know, Socorro is the second largest city in this county, and we're very proud of that. We're further expanding. So we not only have access to some of the big city life in El Paso, but people are coming over to do horseback rides, for example, with Serenity Ranch, or visit some of our authentic Beto Indian restaurants. So there's going to be a cuisine here that you're not going to find other places, because it is based on Native American recipes, because we do have Native American land here. We have our own indigenous tribe here that we're very proud of. And we celebrate that history as well. So there's a lot of cool museums and cultural events that happen throughout the entire year. Our weather is unlike any other weather. It's beautiful weather, almost 360 days. 5 days out of the year, we might get some rain. But other than that, it's a beautiful place to live, work, and play.
I would just encourage anyone and everyone to go, whether you have, you know, Bracero history, farm worker history, you know, if you are of Mexican, Latinx descent, if you just love history, go and visit the site. It is a gem of a site. It is a time capsule. And we're just so excited and honored that it is now a National Historic Landmark. We have very few in the state of Texas. So please go visit it. The site is there for you and everyone to enjoy.
Sheila Mota-Casper is Executive Director of Latinos in Heritage Conservation, an organization dedicated to preserving Latinx heritage nationwide. We also spoke with Victor Reta, Historic Preservation Officer for the city of Socorro, Texas, a border city just southeast of El Paso. If you have connections to the Bracero program, the Rio Vista Farm National Historic Landmark wants to hear from you. They're accepting photos, artifacts, oral testimonies, and financial donations for a planned Bracero museum. A link for more information is at tpr.org. And visit our website to view Rio Vista's National Historic Landmark designation ceremony from this May. It includes one of the last living Braceros, 91-year-old Sebastian Corral, sharing details of his experiences as a Bracero in the U.S. And go to tpr.org to view several historic photos and a guidebook on the story of Rio Vista and its vision for the future. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
Siendo ya larga la historia de relación fronteriza con los Estados Unidos.